we'll find a link with HDCFT to see step by step. So this work is made based on the Gdansk sort of patients, and myself, Michał Feller. So first, I would like to make some very brief motivation. Then I would like to describe biochemical hydrodynamics and especially focus on the viscous corrections. Namely, I would like to describe the energy density function of time and ask what kind of physics is contained in this energy, in this function. And then the main point of our work is to try to extract this quantity using HDCFT. So then I'll describe the HDCFT calculation, the asymptotics, the product of perfect fluid geometry, the discrete and relaxation time for the standard coupled plasma, and I will do the same. So currently the plasma costs many times the compound strongly charged system, so of course any good of course interesting. But of course there are some caveats which one has to remember. There's no one coupling constant, so for example strong coupling is here even for very infinite temperatures. We cannot study freeze out using this framework. Also, we have purely relativistic equation of state in this theory to exactly to treat it. But of course, there are more complicated HDCFT setups, which one can lift some of those assumptions. But in my talk, I will purely concentrate completely on the N-group of plasma system. And just look at that. Yeah. Now, the point of view which we wanted to take is since a lot of things is known about static properties of the theory at fixed final temperature, we would like to ask the question what happens in the non-static dynamical case, which is the direct counterpart of Hawaiian collisions. So for example, if we have those two pancakes, nuclei coming in, then after the collision, there should be isotopization, thermalization, then the plasma fireball would start to expand, the temperature will drop down. So ultimately, we'd like to describe this type of process, at least in the N-equator form setup, using HDCFT. And here we concentrate on this last stage, namely the expansion and cooling of this fireball of plasma. And the main aim was to try to develop quantitative methods for studying this type of time-dependent processes. So concretely, we wanted to concentrate on, ask the same similar questions as people do in hydrodynamics, namely, find the space time dependence of the energy momentum tensor. Namely, we'd like to find how the energy density depends in time, how the momentum flows in this expanding fiber of plasma. So, the basic ingredients which are always present, we have energy momentum conservation, which gives four equations, and equations of state, which in any possible is just the trace essence of the energy momentum tensor. So we have five equations. Now, of course, this is not enough to determine the whole dynamics of the plasma. So one has, of course, to supply some dynamics. For example, if one assumes perfect fluid hydrodynamics, then on top of it, one assumes that mu nu has a form of foam with some local energy density, local pressure, and local velocity of the fluid. So here we have five quantities, E, P, and three components of mu. So this will be a closed system of equations. But now we don't want to assume this type of structure, but try to get as much mileage from the general constraints as possible. And the most, the nicest, I mean, in full generality, of course, we cannot do nothing, but we can go through the Biochem kinematical region, where we can, where these equations are powerful enough just to reduce our knowledge of the dynamics of a single function. So now I would like to describe the Biochem region in some detail. And of course, this regime is interesting from the point of view of heavy ion collisions. In fact, it was introduced by Biochem in 1983 to describe the central velocity regime of the collision. And it amounts, of course, to assume longitudinal boost invariance of the plasma. So if we pass the proper time probability coordinates, everything will just depend on proper time tau, nothing will depend on the velocity y. Also, we will assume for long beyond that nothing, that the nuclei are really infinitely large, so nothing will depend on transverse coordinates x2 and x3. So with these assumptions, the energy tensor simplifies very much. So we have just three non-zero components, t tau tau, t y y, and t x x, which depend only on the proper time tau. Energy momentum conservation gives this equation, faithlessness gives another equation. So we have three functions, two equations. We can express the whole energy momentum tensor in terms of just single function, epsilon of tau, which is the interpretation of energy density in the local rest frame of the plasma. So explicitly, the formulas are like this. So we have some formulas expressed in terms of epsilon of tau. And now the gauge theory dynamics should somehow pick out the physical epsilon of tau of the theory. And different dynamical assumptions will give different answers. For example, perturbative Calabrese condensate calculation would give epsilon of tau here at 1 over tau for infinite times. So this corresponds to free streaming when longitudinal pressure is equal to 0. If one would assume following Björken perfect fluid behavior, namely on top of these equations, assume the form of T mu following from the perfect fluid, which is now very simple because the flow velocity has to be of this form, then epsilon of tau is 1 over tau to the fourth set. So this exponent really also already tells us much about the dynamics. Now I'd like to go and describe in more detail if we include some viscosity, what would change. Okay. So this is just a short review of the spread hydrodynamics, this bioconversion. So the equation for the perfect fluid can be written in this form, d epsilon of d tau is equal to minus 4 cent epsilon of tau, which is the Björken solution. Now, if we consider first order viscous hydrodynamics with some shear viscosity eta, we'll get an additional dissipative term on the right hand side here. Now, of course, eta behaves like Q, and if we can define temperature as a function, as epsilon to the power 3 quarters, plugging it back in, we can find a solution for epsilon of tau, which will be the leading part, will be the Björken result, with the first Sabine correction, which will be 2 times eta 0 over 1 tau to the 2 thirds. Now, of course, it's known that this first order viscous hydrodynamics is problems with causality, and one has to go to second order viscous hydrodynamics, namely the Israel's field theory. Which in fact provides an additional, so the dissipative piece is now fine, and it obeys another evolution equation of this form, where here we have the viscosity of shear viscosity coefficient theta, where here we have an addition relaxation time. And you see, if the relaxation time is exactly zero, we'll get that first order formalism. If it is non zero, we have really the second order. Now, there's a free Boltzmann gas estimation of this relaxation time, which is the following one, that the relaxation time, which is Boltzmann approach, is expressed in terms of the shear viscosity and the pressure by the following formula. So now the question which we wanted to ask is, how does the relaxation time of the strongly coupled inequality of plasma, how is it related to the Boltzmann factor? So if we parameterize the relaxation time as Boltzmann relaxation time times some constant, we can then solve these equations, and we find that the leading and subleading piece is unchanged, but in the next to leading order behavior, we have a dependence on the relaxation time. So we see that if we know epsilon of tau in the Björken regime, we can really see if nonlinear hydrodynamics is true, then we can extract the shear viscosity, and we can also extract the relaxation time.
Yeah? Is it clear that at this order you don't have to go to higher order in the gradient expansion?
No, it's not clear. I mean, we can add additional terms, but they presumably only influence
Yeah, I mean, when you write down Boltzmann equations with a single viscosity, then you're assuming that you don't have to worry about second-order derivatives in your velocity field. Mm-hmm. And there could, in principle, be another coefficient which describes second-order viscosity. Is that somehow the same as this relaxation time, or?
Wouldn't you naively expect that having one more derivative should end up giving you corrections which are suppressed by one more inverse power of tau?
Of tau? When did I get the two-thirds?
Because the coefficients are dimensions,
yes,
they have temperature.
So one gets like a progression. And this type of the second order.
The question is whether.
So here, but I'm taking from Redstone by the logic of the demand from the paper.
And the decomposition of energy momentum delta couldn't be changed also because of because I mean you imply this input, right? Particular form.
Yes.
Which isn't stable against introduction of this extra part.
Well, but, I mean the form of the cumulus.
Yeah.
So now it's different. It's not normal, is it? But this plus is pi tensor.
Okay, so it would be acceptable.
Yes, it's modified. Yes.
I see.
The purpose of Fieser and Stewart was to reject term number two. But term number three is indeed special.
Right. So anyway, what I wanted to say here is that if we try to the epsilon of tau in the Bjorken version encodes a lot of gauge Jordan dynamics to drive us. First of all, the leaking of the asymptotics, like one of the tau to the S, could differentiate between free streaming or hydrodynamics. Then, in this case, some leaking corrections could give rise to, we could read off the viscosity of the relaxation type from sub-asymptotic types. So the question now is how to determine this epsilon of tau from the ADS-CFT correspondence. So we'd like to get. So now the procedure which we adopted is the following one. So first of all, we'd like to represent this evolving plasma state as a non-trivial five-dimensional geometry. It's the same way as the static plasma is represented by a static five-dimensional black hole. We now like to find the same dictionary with the evolving plasma fiber. So this means that we will encode the properties of the plasma in some five-dimensional geometry. And we can always go to such coordinates that the metric has a form of form, which is called the spectral Mondrian form, where here we have dc squared of dc squared, which coefficient 1, and the whole dependence on the geometry. Since in this metric coefficient will depend both on space-time coordinates and the fluid coordinate z. Now, in order for this geometry to be acceptable, to represent some state, the geometry has to be a solution of five-dimensional Einstein equations with negative cosmological constant, which I write here. Now, how to link it with the plasma system? Then we would like to associate with this geometry some expectation value of t minu of the energy momentum tensor in order to be able to link our function epsilon of tau with some geometry here. And the procedure has been given by Skandaris.
Just one question.
Yes?
So in geometric, you don't do anything specific to the time component. So all components, like mu nu is mu nu r, out of.
Yes, actually everything can be here, x mu can be time x, y, z.
But there's no distinction between x and y.
Well, there are different parts. There would be different parts.
Yes.
There will.
Okay. So here it's an arbitrary function for the moment. Arbitrary function. So now the procedure is the following one, but we have to expand this function g mu nu need bundle z equal to 0 in the power series. The leading piece is the gauge theory metric, which is just the Minkowski metric. The first piece is 0. This follows from the Einstein equations. While the coefficient of z to the 4 is in according to this procedure for graph normalization identified with the expectation value of the minimum to this formula. So knowing the geometry, we can get the minimum. And now the second part of the procedure is to construct this type of geometries. And then we find the generically the geometries are singular. So we would like just to find geometries which are non-singular. And then from the geometries we could read up the corresponding VHDL equal T menu. And if we have this T menu, we can get epsilon of tau and then look at the dynamics of the VHDL. So this is the main procedure of our work.
In principle, this one-term correlation function, I know that the trace of the stress ME is a conformal anomaly. Mm-hmm. So I guess what you showed in the previous transparency, which is the expansion of the conformal anomaly, clearly more than in the metric.
What about here? Here we have an unable to form theorem.
Right.
But the boundary is a Minkowski space method, so there's no phase anomaly. So this is traceless.
Yeah, this is your source, right?
So the eta menu is my source.
This is your source, but then on the source, this
G4.
The G2 would be the source. The G4 is like the condensate.
Yes, it's the condensate. But we have no source. We are not looking at
that. That's actually the problem.
The constant should be source. So this geometry is a solution to the equation.
Yes.
So what is that?
Right. This is a solution of that one, and this is automatically conserved, automatically traceless. Awesome. So, for example, if here, when we plug in the constant metric, the constant tensor like epsilon minus epsilon over 3 minus epsilon over 3 minus epsilon over 3, then solving these equations with such a boundary condition would give the static black hole.
This is not a source.
Yes, it's not a source. Okay, apart from getting epsilon of tau.
Kind of boundary condition.
Yes. Apart from getting epsilon of tau, one can ask other questions about, for example, thermodynamics. Because in geometric hydrodynamics, epsilon is like one of the tau of the process, so that means the energy is like T to the tau. So the temperature falls of like one of the tau to the one cell. So plasma cooled unit expansion also, entropy per unit, rapidity per unit, transverse area is constant. So one can ask what are the ADCFT analogs. And in fact, one can guess qualitatively what would come out. Namely, if we compare it with the picture of a static black hole with fixed temperature, then the temperature is encoded in the position of the horizon, as we saw before, and entropy is encoded in the area of the horizon. Now, in geometric hydrodynamics, the temperature falls off like one of the tau to the one side, so one would expect that the horizon would be time dependent and move into the bulk of the edges space. And in fact, it has been proposed by Tim Schwab-Zachert. While we would not like to assume it, but we would like to get it as a kind of as an outcome of this process. But this is the interpretation which one has to keep in mind for interpreting the errors. Okay, so now we want to represent the evolving plasma using some geometry, and we will impose the same symmetry conditions on the plasma, we will impose them on this metric. So that means that our metric will have just three independent coefficients. Each of them will be a function of tau and z. So we have a of tau z, b of tau z, c of tau of z. Then from the expansion close to the boundary, we know that the boundary condition for those coefficients should be like that, should be minus z to the 4 times epsilon of tau plus the rest. And the conditions for b and c follow from those other equations. So first, we consider large time behavior. So we let just to get the asymptotics of epsilon of tau, namely, assume that this is for 1 over tau with the S. And the first state would like to determine S. So now we can just to take this form of the metric, plug it into Einstein's equations, and try to solve. Of course, it's impossible to solve exactly, because it's a very coupled nonlinear partial differential equations. But since we are looking for large proper times, we can look at series expansion of these coefficients, and then isolate the terms which are dominant for large times. And then we find that large time behavior of these coefficients is governed by the scaling variable, V, which is the ratio of z and tau to the s over 4. So we can take z going to infinity, tau going to infinity, keeping v fixed, and we'll get a kind of simple metric which is dominant for large proper times.
So at each state, your solutions, your geometry solves the Einstein equation. That's why it's a space of a constant curvature of ADS. In some sense, so you are trying to do a bit. The way which you're doing to be interpreted is just slicing ADS in a different way.
No. It's not a constant curvature.
But that from the Einstein equation that you have, just have, if I look at your Einstein equation,
the Ricci scale is minus 20. But nothing. But it's
so there's the Ricci scale.
Right? Yes. But El Niño will be some non-trivial cancelled, not proportional to.
Okay.
So now we can take those limits. We'll take those coefficients, take the scaling limits, and the Einstein equations will become coupled, nonlinear, but ordinary differential equations, which depend on the exponent S in various places. So this can be solved exactly. And the solution looks as follows. So A, B, and C are always combinations of log 1 plus something from V to the 4 and log 1 minus something V to the 4, with some coefficients which depend on the exponent S. So here, 2 is minus 2, 2 minus S, and delta of S is this strange square, 3 squared minus 8 S plus 8 over 24. Now, since we have a kind of analytic formula, so we can now start to look at this metric is singular or not. So first of all, we see that there is a potential singularity, namely the argument of the logarithm can vanish for finite value of the decoefficient. So this is a potential singularity at v equal to some fixed constant. And it's convenient to go back to the original z and tau coordinates. This means that the potential singularity of fixed V is a potential singularity for Z equal to some constant times tau times S over 4. So the potential singularity is some curve going like that. And now we'd like to see if this is a coordinate singularity or a real curvature singularity. So to this end, we have to calculate some scalar curvature invariant. So the first non-trivial curvature invariant is the square of the Riemann tensor, which is just a construction of all indices L alpha beta gamma delta, L alpha beta gamma delta. So taking the metric here, taking the scaling limit, gives a very nasty expression with a fourth of the pole in the denominator here. So now one can check that this generically blocks up the singularity, apart from the value of S equal to 4z. When S is equal to 4z, then this pole gets exactly cancelled by the numerator. So the point of the point of this is that Haskell is finite only for S equal to 4z. That means that the requirement of a non-singularity of the dual geometry gives us perfect fluid behavior for large proper times, which is quite nice. Then you can ask what does the geometry look like in this for this choice of S. So if we plug in for cells into those nasty formulas, we'll find that everything will simplify dramatically. All the square roots will disappear, and the metric will look like that. Well, it's not very transparent, but in fact, this one is exactly the same as a black hole in those Stefan-Magahan coordinates, where for a normal black hole, we have here Z0 to the 4, the position of the horizon. Now, it seems that the horizon moves like some constant 10 times tau to the one side. So the picture, this qualitative picture, is supported by this geometry, namely that we find a black hole's horizon which is moving deep into the ADS5 space.
But at any finite tau, it's not a solution of ADS5.
Yes, yes, yes. So it's only kind of asymptotic expansion.
Yes,
so I will describe corrections shortly. So just taking the nine static formulas for the temperature, we find that the temperature falls off like tau to the minus one cell in the open. And also we can find entropy per unit rapidity per transverse area, which is kind of amusing. So calculate the area of the horizon. So we'll get an 1 over tau in the denominator from the position of the horizon. But since we are calculating per unit rapidity, there's an additional tau standing here. So this tau will cancel, and the entropy per unit rapidity and transverse area remains constant along the flow, as required by hydrodynamics. OK, now the similarity of this geometry to the black hole also suggests that the Bjorken expansion may be very stable with respect to perturbations. Namely, Plashansky performed a quaternary mode analysis and found that indeed, if we perturb this Bjorken expansion by some small perturbation, we'll find a kind of exponential, quasi-exponential follow with some power of tau, which can be easily understood. And this and this feature also suggests a kind of attractive property of the revolving perturbative geometry. So if we look our geometry approaches closely to the black hole, then it seems to be can go exponentially to it. But it's kind of okay, so this was the leading part of the geometry.
So correspondingly on the field theory side, that simply corresponds to the fact that when at light time when the gradients are very low, the viscosity becomes the effect of viscosity.
Because
it's proportional to the ground. Yes, this is term number one and not yet term number two. It will come to term number two. Then we would expect to have sub-leading corrections of this tau. So using the same philosophy, we would like to determine this eta 0. So this means that we have to expand metric coefficients in terms of the scaling variable and some powers of tau, inverse powers of tau. So now that we get, for example, exactly the same term of this tau, we see that the natural expansion parameter is one of the tau metric sets. So in fact, the first part has been computed by Nakamura and Sin, but it turns out that it's not enough to determine eta 0. Namely, the geometry at this level is non-singular. So we have to go to the next order, namely a to of tau times 1 over tau to the first set. So we have to determine these sub-leading corrections. And this can be done. So the situation for the following, if we just include the leading corrections, we'll find the curvature is finite here, singular terms here. So we have to go to second order. So these coefficients can be found. There will be a new integration constant. And epsilon tau will be, we have the following formula. Now we can calculate the L squared for this, for these solutions. And we find that here we'll get some singularity, again the fourth order pole. In the numerator, we have some polynomial. And we find that the numerator will cancel the singularity exactly for theta 0 equal to 2 to the minus 1 half times 3 to the power, 3 to the power minus 3 quarters. So now, the natural question is it a sensible result? So, what are the expectations on static properties of the plasma? So, if we take the separate result when it comes to some standards, namely that eta is equal to s over 4 pi, so we have this formula. We'll plug in the temperature as a function of proper time into this formula. Then we can write the formula for eta as the standard coefficient nc squared over 2 pi squared, which has always been taken out for expressions, times 1 over tau, times exactly the eta 0 which we find from before. So this shows that the non-singularity condition gives rise to non-zero viscosity, determines also the exact viscosity coefficient, and also it's interesting that it's really consistency check ADS-CFT, which is quite non-trivial, because this way of getting eta 0 is completely independent of the different ways which were, of getting eta 0 before. So, but now, if you recall, that since we have our solution for epsilon tau up to the second order, we can also get the relaxation time in the second order viscous hydrodynamics. Namely, the relaxation time is related to this term here, so in particular to this new integration constant C. So if we plug in the energy density, which we have up to the second order, into the second order viscous hydrodynamic equations, then we can calculate R, which is the ratio between the relaxation time of the strongly coupled theory and the Boltzmann relaxation, which is given by some ugly numbers, which are mostly ugly because these coefficients here are also ugly. Like that. However, the problem is that, so in order to find the relaxation time, we have to find this coefficient C. Mm-hmm. And as you saw before, the curvature up to the second order, the coefficient of C is finite. So in order to determine it, we have to go one order more in the method. And this is unfortunately a nasty calculation. So we have some length expressions for A3, B3, and C3. Fortunately, only part of those expressions enters the curvature, so we don't need to be able to solve for the whole geometry. And we find that, again, this fourth order pole in the curvature for non-singularity fixes C to be this log 64 minus 17 over the square root of C, which just comes out from the formula. This also, in fact, a leftover logarithmic singularity, which was not present before, which at least in this framework cannot be cancelled. So, the only way which we found to cancel it is in fact to introduce a non-zero dilaton into the game, and then assume that the string metric should be the quantity which will be finite and non-singular. So, anyway, once we have this value of C, we can plug it. So in fact, this thing here, the two natural metrics. One is just Gmu, which I was talking about before, which so the Einstein equations look definitely the same. While the metric which is seen by strings moving in this background has part which is multiplied by b2 minus phi over 2, where phi is the dilaton. So it's also very natural from the string point of view. And our condition is that this string frame metric should be not singular.
So the Einstein frame metric is singular?
Yes. Yes. It is singular in a matter of way, so there will be a logarithmic singularity. In the string frame, there will be contribution from the deduction which exactly cancels this logarithmic divergence will not change this value.
I don't understand something. So the autonomy is not constant? Yes.
Yes.
Coefficient 6 is no longer 6 to the Einstein equation?
No, the 6 is okay, but 6 comes from yes.
Where is the autonomy? Why is the autonomy?
So it's still constant or not?
So?
The electron
is
not constant.
It's not constant.
How is that this performance here?
Sir?
How is that? We're doing an inclusion.
Yes. Yes, but again. But again, I can consider states with the expectation value of trace x squared is not zero. And this will be just such a state. So there's no contradiction. I mean, I can excite normalizable modes to the Dirac. So this is just that. This here, I have some normalizable modes of the Dirac excited. And there are enough of them so that I can fit them as phi of. There's some classical field. But this classical field vanishes on the boundary. So on the boundary, there's no source. So anyway, we can now plug in this value for C into the formula for relaxation time. Yes?
Does this mean that the dilaton is also singular at the horizon?
Sir?
Does this mean that the dilaton is also singular somewhere? If the string frame metric is non-singular and the Einstein frame metric is singular,
yeah.
The dilaton is doing something funny?
I guess so.
That sounds bad.
Sounds bad. But in fact here, I would say that all those expansions, in fact, they strictly break down in the horizon.
So you hope that some resummation
Yes. So I cannot really believe the expansions at the horizon. I can only say that if I approach V to the singular potential singularity, I mean, things blow up. Mm-hmm. But I cannot really believe them exactly at the horizon.
Just try to finish.
Yes, I'm finishing. So with my the slide before. So okay, the bottom line is that plugging in the value the relaxation time, we find the relaxation time is 30 times shorter than what is expected from the Boltzmann equations. So this then we cover the expectations. So this would suggest that viscous hydrodynamics is much closer to the first order formalism one expects. So therefore, it would be also very interesting in trying to fit second order viscous hydrodynamics to real carbon plasma to try to also determine this relaxation time, or at least to try to see if much lower value of relaxation time than the one which is usually taken would give what would be its influence. It would be very interesting to understand it. Finally, it is the non-vanishing dilaton, which appears here, gives an expectation value for trace x squared, which is of the following type. The trace x squared is some negative minus times some coefficient times tau to the minus 10 cents. Now, the fact that it's negative means that magnetic modes start to dominate, because trace x squared is e squared minus b squared. And in a way, it's natural from the Gauge theory point of view. Because in this picture of plasma stabilities, the magnetic mode tends to rise faster than the electric modes in such anisotropic situations. So it's maybe quite sensitive. Okay, so I'll now just summarize. So we propose a kind of general framework to study the dynamics of gauge plasma using ADCFT by construction of dual geometries and involve putting some requirements of non-singularity. So we found a perfect fluid, which is a specific viscosity, very short relaxation time, which is quite puzzling. So it would be very interesting also to try to understand it from the kinetical theory, if the correction which would make it short. We found also a non-zero trace S squared. And also, the current system seems to be quite stable. Now there are other interesting questions, namely the description of the state of the dynamics. So there will be a talk by Yurkov Chekhov that we are also working on it. The question of isotropization, thermal instabilities. It will be interesting to also, from a more general perspective, to clarify what is temperature and entropy in this dynamical setting, perhaps using the framework of dynamical horizons. Also, what would be the global structure of the volume geometries? What is the meaning of the virtual relaxation time? And also, for place F squared, can one understand the power of tau? I mean, just from some sense of consciousness. That's interesting.
Everybody puzzled at what moment in completely conformal settings and Einstein equation to deal with it. Well, at what moment is it here?
But why is it?
There are solutions where I think what you have is.
There's no equations containing letter pi. At what moment it appears?
Oh, okay. Okay, no. Then, of course, one has to solve the Einstein equations, the Einstein Dilapin equations. So, on the right hand side of the Einstein equations, one will get. Well, before, because before, I did not switch on the Dilapin. So, the Dilapin field was set to zero. But then, we encountered the logarithmic singularity. So, this somehow.
But there was space transition in between. Equations changed.
Equations changed, yes. So we just had to look at equations of Einstein equations, class equations for the Dilapin, the coupled system of equations. And we.
Sorry, I sort of want to continue on. At which case the phase transition occurs? I think that the fact that you have a trace of the stress, and in the stress energy term, this depth force coefficient, I guess would natural. There are natural solutions to the so-called Janus deformations of ADS1, right? So when you take this entry point means and you deform it by the variables that F squared operates, so people have.
You can find a solution of any equation. The question is
right. So my question is I think in those cases there will be a part to the one-point correlation function of the stress energy, and it will be related to the values that operate.
Yeah, but the difference was that in those cases, one really deforms the theory by phase F squared. Mm-hmm. But here, I do not do that. The theory is undeformed.
No, so, of course, you deform the theory. It's not conformal theory. How you put the atomic
theory? No, but also, if we just look at the subject plasma, it's no longer conformal because we have put in a temperature, right? So the conformal symmetry is broken not by changing the theory, but by introducing a state with some energy density. We just put it by hand because it's how we prepare the state. So here the
theory is zero.
Sorry?
T mu is zero. You have plasma, but if T mu is zero, so it's conformed.
But the right question is what's the explicit behavior of the dilaton? So are you saying that the dilaton doesn't have a constant heat?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Then it's, as you said, it's just a state.
Yes, exactly. So it's just a state.
But what does it mean? So it is not. The Bjorken problem was completely conformed. We started with m equals 48, which was completely conformed. No?
Because there was a fixed energy density.
Fixed energy density
has nothing
to do with conformal.
It's
traceless.
It's
traceless, so it's conformal.
Your result. Yes. That doesn't mean that trace F squared can't have a non-zero expectation value.
Yes.
Where is F squared? There's nowhere F squared.
Well, one way to take it out is there's a V2 symmetry between positive and negative negative dilaton corresponding to electromagnetic swap. So he's broken that V2. As soon as you turn on the state of the
I understand that it's broke, but why?
It's you, right?
What was it? Well, when you
yes, the sign came from the logarithmic singularity.
So you want a solution, not singular?
Yes.
You prefer to break a theory rather than have a solution with a singular?
No, I'm not breaking a theory.
I would say, physically speaking, if there is a continual field, there must be a source to that field, right?
No.
What do you mean if it's a
state?
No, of course there are gravitational waves.
Right, but it's possible. I think you're saying that you don't have a non-singular solution, right? The Einstein frame metric is singular.
Yes.
So that's a problem thing. I don't know. But with the event of background on zero, there is no problem.
So there is a problem.
But physically, we want to have a source to this thing.
It's a state. Then it will be different theory. That's why we don't want to have a source. We want to stay in the same theory. We want to study a different state.
This is long debate. I'm just trying to understand what is going on in this debate. So if I'm studying static state, then I can imagine a nice static state that has non-zero expectation of t mu and zero expectation of f squared.
Yes.
Now, what you're saying is that if you now imagine evolving t mu in time, relaxing it somehow in a Bjerken expansion, a Bjerken-like expansion, then you cannot consistently evolve or decay t mu in time unless you also decay somehow f squared in time. Is this
yes,
right?
Exactly. Because in a way, because thinking of them, phase f squared is zero, and it's completely natural because there's equilibration between everything is thermal equilibrium, everything is equilibrated between electric and magnetic modes. So phase f squared has to be zero. But at some subheating of there, we have dissipative effects. And I think nothing really turns out.
The conformal theory doesn't work conformally. It's dissipative conformally.
The question is whether you can come up with a generalization where the dilaton is finite and the string frame metric is.
In principle, what we're doing is you started from some boundary condition, goes in with that solution. At some moment, you're supposed to find something, right? It is a black hole. What do you say? No. Black hole has a source. It sits in the center.
Any normal solution should be non-singular. Or singularity should be behind the horizon.
It is behind the horizon. You will find it.
Then that's fine. As long as it is.
It is supposed to be a departing black hole with departing horizon. Where does departing horizon come from? From some object.
I think the statement of the theory is so you have a negative singularity in Einstein.
Yes, because this logarithmic, the L squared, this so like log of something.
So normally people would say that's an unresolved. Yes. And we have to understand the singularity.
What is the shape of this singularity? The support of this singularity? Is it a point like? Or?
The point
is,
everything.
Well, it's like hyperbola, moves like.
Okay.
I'm completely blown away by your claim that the Isherwood relaxation time is only a 30th of the Boltzmann unit. So if I take the Boltzmann formula for our case, Rick at twice TC, you get about 0.15 permiability for the relaxation time. I divide that by 30, I get 0.005 permiability. That's the shortest time scale any physics that I've ever seen in Rick. I would associate that with very, very high PT jets, but not with a system that is thermalized at a temperature of 400 MeV. Does that number make any sense?
I don't know. I mean, this comes out here. Also here, this is a property of, I mean, in the proof too far, right?
Sorry?
This is a property of the specimative theory.
Yeah.
So here, there's no transition between half and so.
But it's, so I mean, the uncertainty relationship which should still hold. Yeah? So I should be able to associate times with inverse energies. And at a time of 0.005 Fermi over C, I can't tell anything about energies with an accuracy greater than 30 GeV.
This isn't telling you anything about that sort of short time question. This is telling you about tiny corrections to late time thermalization.
Right. Okay. If general principle can go out early time, now we have to finish. And since we are late, let us start 10 minutes later, because I really don't see any
other way. 10 minutes past 4.
10 minutes past 4.